So when the clock strikes four this afternoon, officially the time will be up. And what will the months of crises, the countless hours of negotiations all end up with? Perhaps another new deadline. The DUP and Sinn Féin remain locked in talks, but a deal to get Stormont back up and running still has to be struck. And despite saying that the British government wouldn't be considering what happens in the event of no agreement, James Brokenshire will have to be considering the options now. Let's get the latest from Stormont Castle. Our political correspondent, Enda McClafferty, stood outside that building late into night. Lots of coffee again, Enda. And lots of watching people at windows and wandering about with mobile phones. But do we have any idea of how close or how far apart this DUP and Sinn Féin are?
Well, truth be told, no, this morning, Chris. The parties talk, we understand, to around 2 o'clock this morning. We know Sinn Féin and the DUP are due back there around now to resume those discussions once more with the Secretary of State, James Brokenshire, and the Irish Foreign Affairs Minister, Simon Coveney. And we know the other parties are also due to return to Stormont Castle this morning. But the latest information we have is that there's no sense that the parties are getting any way close to agreeing a deal that would allow, as you say, in 7 hours, time for that deadline to be met so that the Stormont institutions can be back up and running today. And the sticking point, as you know and as many people know by now, is around the Irish Language Act. And it was pretty clear from the language being used yesterday by John O'Dowd and also by Edwin Poots of the DUP that there's going to be no meeting of minds anytime soon on that issue. And unless a rabbit is pulled out of the hat at some stage this morning to get us over that particular hurdle, it doesn't look good for the restoration of the institutions.
Well, let's punch into some of the detail of what we do know. The Irish Language Act, this, we keep on hearing that it is really about whether or not it's a standalone Irish Language Act or whether it's a hybrid act, all right? What does that actually mean? Is it simply about whether something is called something? Because that seems slightly ridiculous if it's about the title of legislation.
Yes, the language of the Language Act is crucially important here for Sinn Féin, Chris, because this is more than just about a piece of legislation. This, for Sinn Féin, goes back, if you like, to what they talked about, respect and equality, what they framed their election campaign around, what Martin McGuinness resigned over way back at the start of the year. And this is essentially Sinn Féin saying, look, this is the manifestation of all we believe in respect and equality in an Irish Language Act. And this, in a sense, is a test for the DUP as far as Republicans are concerned, because if DUP can't sign up to an Irish Language Act, then the Republicans will say this isn't a changing DUP, if you like. And that's what they've asked for. They've said the status quo can't be the same. But if they do see the DUP signing up to an Irish Language Act, well, then Sinn Féin will be able to sell it to their people and say, look, this is a different DUP. They've now moved. They're now respecting the Irish language fraternity in Northern Ireland. And this perhaps is the first step towards maybe a changing attitude within government. For their part, the DUP would say, look, if this is about respect and equality, then what about the Ulster Scots? That deserves the same recognition as Irish language, and that's why the DUP have proposed this hybrid model, which would include rights and protection for both the Irish language and also for Ulster Scots. But that's not what Sinn Féin are after. They want to see a distinct, standalone Irish Language Act.
So it's just kind of basically symbolism, this. This is about a symbolism of acceptance and compromise, and that's really what the parties are doing here.
Yes, essentially that's what it is, because if it's purely a piece of legislation, Chris, there's nothing stopping Westminster stepping in for a week and passing an Irish Language Act like the commitment that was back in the St Andrews Agreement, because
which of course was a commitment by the British government, yeah.
Absolutely, a government commitment. So if it was about a piece of legislation being passed here, then Westminster could do that in the space of a week or so. But that is not what it's about. It's about the relationship between Sinn Féin and the DUP, and it's about Sinn Féin seeing a changing DUP, if you like, before they return to government and before they return to sharing power. Because this is what Martin McGuinness talked about in his resignation letter, talking about 10 years of being in government with the DUP, but not feeling as equals. And this, in a sense, is what Sinn Féin are standing firm on now, the fact that they need to see a change in the way the DUP is going to go about its business. And the first move in that would be recognising a standalone Irish Language Act. So this cuts to the very heart of this dispute within government. And the indications are there's very little movement so far. There's nothing to suggest there's going to be some movement this morning. And it may take some time to resolve this. What you might find today, in fact, Chris, is the Secretary of State talking to both parties and saying, look, if we give you a bit more time, is there a possibility we could get round this difficulty? And find a third way, if you like, to allow us to move forward. And that might mean, for instance, they might look at two pieces of legislation, one, a standalone Irish Language Act, and another piece of legislation to give the same rights and protections around Ulster Scots. Who knows? A third way is going to have to be found, because at the minute, the logjam doesn't look as if it's going to be overcome anytime soon.
Yeah, but even listen to that, Enda. You're basically saying that they're getting to the same place with the same legislation. It's just a different way of doing it.
And
it'd be really interesting to hear your views this morning, what you think about this debate, this discussion, and whether or not you feel the parties should do a deal, and whether this idea of having a standalone Irish Language Act really matters. 03030 805555 is the number. They are open now. Give us a call. And the other big issues that continue to be mentioned, same-sex marriage and Arlene Foster stepping aside. Is there an indication that there has been some kind of movement on those issues from the parties?
Well, I think we got a hint that there may be something there whenever Declan Kearney addressed the cameras a couple of days ago, whenever he was asked specifically about the Arlene Foster position as regards her role as First Minister, because Sinn Féin have been pretty clear throughout. They say that they will not support her in a role as First Minister while there are questions around her involvement in the RHI scheme. And we know that inquiry, of course, is going to get up and running in September. But the other day, Declan Kearney was asked specifically about that. And he seemed to hint that if other elements of the deal fell into place, then Sinn Féin would take another look at that. And their position may indeed change if they felt there was enough in the agreement to warrant restoring the institutions with Arlene Foster as First Minister. But that would be a big sell to their people, Chris, to be able to change their position on that. And that's why they need to see a lot of detail in whatever deal is agreed eventually, so that they can go to their people at some stage and look and say, look here, the agreement sets out a roadmap now, a different plan, we can expect a different DUP, and maybe that would allow them in some senses to roll back from that position about Arlene Foster as First Minister. And we know what happens generally is that the parties, they go into negotiations, they hammer out an agreement before they sign the dotted line, they take it back to their people on the ground to get a sense of what they think of what's on the table. And we know that process takes time, and time is something our politicians just don't have anymore.
Yeah, although practically they are still talking, which means they're talking about something. The Assembly was supposed to meet at midday. Is that still scheduled to happen? And what happens if the Assembly doesn't meet today?
Well, what will happen this morning is that a business committee will meet at Stormont, and this is essentially a committee made up of the parties whereby they set the business for today. And the feeling is that if there isn't a deal by the time that business committee are due to meet, if there's no sign of a particular deal, then that business committee may decide, well, it's a pointless exercise pressing ahead with things. But a lot of onus will be placed on the Speaker, Robin Newton, today, because, of course, he has some big calls to make as to whether or not he presses ahead with an empty chamber. Perhaps the DUP might be there, might other unions, politicians might be there. Sinn Féin, if there's no deal, you can be guaranteed won't be there. So there may be something like that, but it's extremely unlikely that James Brokenshire would allow it to get to that particular stage, because then that would appear like farce on a day so important to restoring the institutions here in Northern Ireland. So I would imagine at some stage during the process today, James Brokenshire will have a discussion with the parties to say, if we're not going to get a deal today, might we get a deal if there's more time? And if he gets a feeling that that might happen, then you could see James Brokenshire amending the legislation to allow for a further extension in the negotiation timetable, so that parties maybe could come back next week and try and hammer down a deal that would see Stormont returned and the MLAs back in the chamber. So that's possibly what the conversation is going to be today at some stage. But a call is going to have to be made before four.
We could be saying deadline day. It's deadline day yet again and yet again and yet again. For the moment, Enda, thanks very much indeed. Let's go to some of your calls. 03030 805555. Lots of you want now this morning. We're going to try and open up the phone lines and get as many on as you can. Norman's in Dungannon. How are you, Norman?
Hello, how are you?
What do you make of all this then, sir?
I make an awful lot of it. As long as they're not getting their full pay, why would you pay them if they're not working?
Well, they are getting their pay.
They're not arguing their pay. They're not working. They're not doing anything for Northern Ireland. The money shouldn't be going on. If you're somebody working for you and they weren't there, would you pay them?
Well, Nicola Mullen from the SDLP is on the line. I know you won't back into the Assembly, but I mean, how much are you paid, Nicola?
Annually, we're paid £48,000.
And do you think that all the MLAs are worth that money at the moment?
Well, I'm very clear on this. I don't think you should be being paid for a job that you don't do. So certainly, yes, I'm still out in the constituency. You know, I'm still helping people around constituency work, and I do that in office hours, outside of office hours. I don't deserve any recognition for it. That's the job. But I'm not performing any role up in the Assembly in terms of on my committee or like looking at legislation, so I shouldn't be paid for that aspect of it. I'm very clear on that. I think that's right and that's fair.
Do you think you'll be performing that aspect anytime soon?
Well, I hope so. I mean, we have heard from political parties that this deal can be done in 24 hours. They've been telling us that for months and for weeks. So we're, what, 6-7 hours out? We do believe that a deal can be done. But essentially, whether we do get devolved government up and running is a matter for the DUP and Sinn Féin. Now, the quality of that and how inclusive it is a matter for all of us. But we maintain that a deal still can be done by the deadline today. And we think it's a shame if it's not.
Norman, I heard you wanted to jump in there and just speak to Nicola.
But are they getting paid? I'm asking the question, are they getting full pay? And she's admitting
yes,
they shouldn't be. But are they?
Yes, Norman, we are. We are getting full pay.
Well, you've said yourself that you're not doing your full job. You're representing your constituency and all our people. But is that enough for your full pay?
Well, Norman, I've said this a number of times. I've said it to constituents that have spoken to me about it, and I've said it on media interviews. I think why we've been getting our full pay is because there had been a hope that the deadlines would be met, we would get agreement, and that we would all be back to work performing all of our functions and all of our roles. Now, come 4 o'clock today, we're going to know one way or the other whether we're going to be doing that.
We'll maybe know. Let's be honest, Nicola, we'll maybe know. It might be another deadline. It might be things moving again.
It could possibly be, and I think, you know, the public are understandably fed up. There's many of us, MLAs across a number of parties, particularly in the SDLP, that are completely and utterly fed up. And because we've been genuine in this process, we've been trying to come up with ideas to help people get over hurdles. We've been actually even putting forward ideas around childcare, housing, trying to tackle poverty. So not just focusing on the big issues, but focusing on issues that affect everybody's everyday life. And, you know, we can only do as much as we can. So we will know in a couple of hours' time, have we met today's deadline? Then we will know, do we move to another deadline? But certainly we're in there and we're trying our best.
And we're hearing, Nicola, that the issue is the Irish Language Act, or a potential Irish Language Act. Alex is on the line from Lisburn. What do you think of this?
Well, I just think if the price of devolution is the ability for everybody in Northern Ireland to walk into a doctor's surgery or a hospital or a police station, and we dealt with in Irish, despite the fact they're fluent in English, if that's the price we're paying for devolution, I think maybe we need to look at it again. And maybe direct rule would be a cheaper option, frankly.
So you actually would go for direct rule?
Well, I just think, I mean, in the Republic of Ireland, when it was pointed to there, I think maybe some of the real problems, De Valera gave great encouragement to the Irish language, Gaeltacht and so forth. And they haven't worked. And yet they basically spend millions on it for no real return. And are we going to do the same thing in the north here? And then there's going to be a corresponding amount of money given to the Ulster Scots.
Well, Irish language.
Keep the Ulster Scots people happy.
Well, Irish language campaigner Ciarán McGillivine's on the line as well. I mean, you do feel an Irish Language Act would be worth the money, don't you? Speak to Alex.
Of course, and I think it's worth pointing out, and I've made that point before. We have language acts in Wales, we have language acts in Scotland, and they have perfectly functioning hospitals, they have perfectly running roads, they have effective schools. And if people believe that the direct rule could somehow remedy this or circumvent this, it was the British government that was pointed out at the start of your programme. It was the British government that first made the commitment in St Andrews around introducing an Irish language act. If the direct rule were coming into place, it would be illegal to leave on the British government to fulfill their obligations, as they've been called on by the UN, by the Council of Europe, and by other international bodies.
Okay, your line is trying to split up there a little bit, Ciarán. We'll try and get that line sorted. Fred's in Dromore, because you have an issue about this Irish Language Act as well.
The Irish Language Act is something that we're told has been forced upon the situation by the Irish government.
Well, it's not being forced upon the situation by the Irish government. There's an indication that the Irish government support the idea of an Irish Language Act.
Well, they support, but they're pressurising. That's one of the points. There seems to be a difference here. For one says they're more less forcing the issue. But why not do that in their own country? But we have too many things forced on us here in Northern Ireland by outside parties, namely the Irish government and the United States. Do you think there's the Flags and Emblems Act some years ago forced upon us by the United States, yet they do not practice these things themselves?
Nicola Mallon, what do you think of the Irish government getting involved? Do they have a place, considering that you were complaining about the idea that the British government could be influenced by the fact that the DUP are now propping up the Conservatives? Do you think the Irish government should be getting involved in what they think about these negotiations between the parties?
Well, I think that the Irish government have been very clear in their role, and there hasn't been any complaint or concerns up to this point. I think it wasn't trying to unduly influence.
Well, the DUP are complaining. The DUP have said.
They're complaining now. But I don't think it's the Irish government trying to exercise any undue influence. And I think what you're starting to find from two of the big parties here is that, you know, they're starting to try to spread the blame. It's the blame game because we're close to the wire and it seems that a deal is not going to be possible. And so it's about, well, it's their fault. They interfered. They said this, they did that. When really they need to hold the mirror up to themselves. I know that people are saying this is just purely about an Irish language act. It's much greater than that. This is about identity. It's about Irish nationalism. And it's been fueled by the contempt that's been shown to that and shown to that community by the DUP.
Hello.
And Gregory Campbell and Arlene Foster. And underpinning all of this, it isn't a commitment of a previous agreement.
Well, was that you, Fred, trying to say something?
Yeah. Well, I have a relation who's an advisor to the government in Dublin. And the young man, a Chinese man, came all the way to Ireland and he learned the Irish language and wanted to get a job and no one knew what he was talking about. Why introduce something that somebody doesn't need to know? Do they want to introduce the Irish Language Act all over Europe as well?
Well, I don't think it's about that, though, is it? It's about giving respect to the Irish language. That's what the argument
respect
is.
Respect to the Irish language may be all right. The whole thing's based on culture. There's only two cultures matter in Northern Ireland and in particular the Republic of Ireland. That is agriculture. They're two main industries.
Well, Kieran McGillivine's back on the line. You've actually costed how much you think an Irish Language Act would cost, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. We carried out in-depth research into this.
And what? How much do you reckon?
Cost could be within $3.8 million per year. And that includes a one-off infrastructure cost of $9 million, which would absolutely drop after the first 5 years of this executive. It's worth pointing out as well, and we can all have views on this. We can all spout out what we think the Irish language needs, but I think it's worth bearing in mind what the international experts have said on this. There are people that have carried out in-depth research that have looked at other countries with minority languages, and they're all in agreement that a clearly agreed legal framework will support the development of the languages against attacks that Nicola pointed out earlier. That is a clear way forward in terms of building a sustainable future for the language. We have a very vibrant language community. That language community has made promises over 10 years ago, promises that haven't been delivered. It's time to deliver on that and to move on and to take the language away from the confrontational arena of party politics.
030 30 80 55 55, if you want to get involved in this. Jim Alistair from the TUV is also on the line. You've been listening to this discussion. An Irish Language Act. Do you think the DUP are prepared to do the deal?
Well, it's quite clear that Sinn Féin is looking for the DUP into sackcloth and ashes over this issue. It's quite clear. We really should put these institutions out of their misery. How many times do they have to fail? How many years are we going to go on loading in sticky plaster to put them back together again when it's patently obvious they're incapable of working? And there's a very simple, inescapable reason that people don't want to face up to as to why they're not working. And it's this. Sinn Féin has never been in Stormont, will never be in Stormont, in order to make Northern Ireland work. Therefore, any system that insists that they are at the heart of government is never going to work. If that's the only form of Stormont we can have, then we'd be better without it. We need to get government. We're obviously not going to get it from Stormont. As for an Irish Language Act, I've listened to hours of endless discussion on this. I've yet to hear anyone articulate in a sensible, rational way why we need an Irish Language Act. The Irish language is already overstated in Northern Ireland. It has its own school system where you can set up a primary school with 12 pupils. You can't do that for English-speaking pupils.
Well,
an Irish language school for 12 pupils. It has its own cross-border body with executive powers. It is fated with millions of pounds. So why do we need an Irish Language Act? Somebody simply tell me what we need that we haven't got. That would be in an Irish Language Act.
Well, a couple of things.
Latest political campaign, part of Sinn Féin's long game to de-Briticise Northern Ireland and to drive those of us who are another aspect of Brits out. Is that what it is?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Sinn Féin aren't on the programme this morning, although we did give them the option to. But I think they would say that they would try to make devolved government work and have tried to make devolved government work.
You do not want Northern Ireland to work. You cannot make a success of Northern Ireland and then say you need a united Ireland. A seven-year-old could work that out. And that's the reality of Stormont. They are not there to make Northern Ireland work. They don't want Northern Ireland to work because you can't make it work and then say, oh, but we must have a united Ireland. So they're there for quite the opposite reason. And that penny needs to drop. But, of course, there's some who just close their eyes to it.
And the other thing, of course, is you talked there about the Irish Language Act and why it's needed. Ciara McGillivine still on the line. You talked about it being £3.8 million to get an Irish Language Act and to make it work. What's that money for? And does that take into account the millions that are already being spent on Irish language schools, on Irish language programmes, for example?
Well, of course, it's worth pointing out, as Harry said, that that money that's spent on Irish language schools would have to be spent anyway, because those children would need educated. Those 6,000 plus children would need to be educated regardless of the medium of instruction.
It would be £3.8 million on top of how much has been spent already on Irish language programmes and schools?
Yes, of course.
So how much is spent already?
In this act? What do we need in this act? I've yet to hear that explained. What is it that needs to be in this act?
Well, Jim is obviously somebody who has a background in legal matters and somebody who's aware of international law. And first and foremost, if we hear an Irish language, it will mean that we are fulfilling our international legal obligations. First and foremost, these are clearly set out in law. We have been in breach of these consistently, as has been pointed out by the UN and by the Council of Europe. So that would take that back immediately. But also,
you're not answering the question that Jim has, though. Jim is asking specifically what would this Irish Language Act deliver?
Are spent in shows like the Nolan Show and other programmes debating the Irish language. That has been done because of nefarious political attacks against the language over years.
You haven't told us what you haven't got.
In the last six months, six out of the seven developer proposals for Irish medium schools rejected. We have a need for bursary grant removed.
Hang on, Ciarán. To be fair to Jim, he's actually saying that you haven't answered his question. You're talking about what's happened in the past. Is it a fair question for him to say what exactly is going to be in this Irish Language Act? What is it going to deliver that you don't have already?
Yeah, okay. Well, first and foremost, it would give us official recognition. It would give the language official recognition. So rates on language speakers. We have had court cases where people have taken the cases to the High Court and would have been told, well, in the absence of any domestic law protecting the Irish language, they have no right to speak to the language here. It would also increase the ability of the language. It would create clear legal framework for government departments that would all have to follow, regardless of political affiliation. Unfortunately, what we have here is a situation whereby ministers do use their influence then to remove grants, to remove schemes, to reject development proposals, despite there being clear demand for these. And this has been condemned internationally, this has been condemned nationally, and it's time to move on. We Irish language activists, Irish language community, wants to see this removed from the toxic, confrontational party political arena. We want all ministers, regardless of their political affiliation, to be given a very clear legal framework.
Okay, Ciarán, I'm going to have to interrupt you only because your line is so bad. We can barely hear what you're saying. Okay, very quickly, just if you could make it 20 seconds, because honestly, your line's awful.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry, I was just... Hello?
Yeah, very quickly, go ahead, Ciarán.
The point is we need a clear legal framework that is outside of party political persuasions, that places clear legal obligations on all ministers, regardless of the party. We had a High Court victory, a judicial review victory against the executive for the failure to bring about the adaptive strategy. This was something that they all agreed to do in the law, and they refused to do.
Okay, and Ciarán, we are going to have to leave it there because your line, we just honestly can barely hear you. But Jim Allister, the point is there. He's basically saying that people want legal protection, they want respect. Is that really such an awful thing to give people?
I think we were beginning to get the truth of why they want an Irish Language Act. The most important thing that your contributor said was he wanted it given official status, and no doubt he wants it given equal status with the English language.
Well, why not? Why not give all languages equal status? What's wrong with that?
Well, just listen and you will hear what's wrong with that. Let's work this through. You give Irish official status equal with English. That means any citizen can walk into a doctor's surgery, can walk into a Social Security office, can walk into any public service and demand that everything they do is conducted with them in Irish. Now, what does that do for jobs in the public service? That means that within the public service, those with Irish as a speaking language are going to get preferment. And that is why this is part of Sinn Féin's long game. It's about making the public service a cold place for unionists, about driving you out, about making sure you don't get the job opportunities unless you come in to speak Irish. And that's what it's all about in a context where every citizen in this country essentially speaks English, can perfectly well converse in English, but wants for political purposes and for political motivation to converse in Irish, to translate the society away from being part of a British society to being an all-Irish society.
And Nicola Mullen...
That's what Nicola did in Ireland when he brought in the 1937 Constitution, and it's still in the 37 Constitution, Article 8, that Irish is the first and official language of the Republic. That then required it to be taught in all schools. It made it a requirement for civil service jobs, and it drove many, many people who weren't of that tradition out of the Republic of Ireland. And that is the same game plan that Sinn Féin has in 2017. And, it's part of their long game.
And Nicola Mullen, whenever you listen to that and you hear things like, one of the things that's been talked about potentially around this Irish Language Act is you could have a 10% cap, for example, of people who need to speak Irish language within the civil service in order to kind of translate things. I mean, is that the kind of Irish Language Act that you want to see?
Well, I think it's difficult at this stage because we haven't seen the detail of anything. But, I mean, I'm listening.
Well,
to,
do you think, for example, that somebody who goes to get any kind of public service, for example, going to a GP surgery, as Jim says, that they have to be entitled to be dealt with in Irish, even if they speak English?
Well, I think that in all of these things, you have to be reasonable in request. And I don't think that anybody that I have heard advocating for an Irish Language Act have said that you must have universal and immediate access to all public services and all services in Gaelic. I haven't heard that. And, you know, I listened to Jim, and Jim is a proud unionist, but I haven't heard him talk about Wales, the impact, the detrimental impact that legislation has had in Wales, for instance, on the public service. I haven't heard him being as irate about that. And I would ask Jim, has Jim met with Irish speakers? Because I'm happy to take and to meet with people, not people who politicise it or use it as a weapon, but Irish speakers who want to explain to him and to me and to others why they believe in this, why it's important, and what why it resonates. So
let's ask Jim. Do you object to the amount of money that's spent in Scotland and Wales on languages there?
That's a matter for the devolved.
No, but do you object to it? You're a unionist, so you can say have a say about things that happen in other parts of the UK.
The Gaelic language has not been weaponized as it has in Northern Ireland. It's not part of a long-term political agenda as it is here. So it's quite different, but it's a matter for Scotland and Wales what they do with their languages. But in Northern Ireland, so long as it's a devolved issue, then I'm entitled to my say and to point out the long-term intentions of those who want an Irish Language Act. It's about hollowing out our Britishness. That's what it's about, and it's part of that political campaign. Just as Sinn Féin years ago said that every word spoken was another bullet fired in the freedom struggle. Sadly, they weaponized the Irish language. There's nothing wrong with aspiring to speak as many languages as you like, but when you weaponize a language like that, then don't be surprised that you stir up opposition to ramming it down everyone else's throat. And that's what this is about.